Let me introduce you.
Let me introduce you.
Welcome back to Let Me Introduce You, your favorite film and friends podcast. If you haven't listened in a while, or you're just joining us, we are a podcast of, we're three best friends who went to film school together. And each time we get together, we pick a film that at least one of us hasn't seen. And we try to, you know, shock, dazzle, annoy each other with our choice. I am Ashley, your redheaded host.
It's not a visual medium, but
I like to give people a picture in their minds. You have to paint a picture with your words.
I understand. So hi, I'm Katie. I am the brunette of the brunette lady.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, I'm Graham, I'm the homo.
Who also has
the brown,
dark brown hair. I mean, you never know, right? Well, y'all, we are so excited to be back. We have taken, what's that called when you take a long break?
Hiatus?
Sabbatical? Hiatus. Yeah. There we go. We've taken a little bit of a break. We've actually recorded some episodes, but thanks to my lackadaisical schedule of editing, we haven't really released any of them. So,
one was pretty unreleasable because my audio is so bad.
We had many tech issues for one,
and we decided.
And a screaming child.
And we did one on Bugsy Malone, and Katie hated it, and Ashley and I were like, "We're not releasing it because it's perfection." And how dare!
Oh, rude! No, that movie was god awful.
I
forgot
wonderful.
That I watched it, and I was like, "Oh god, I forgot that."
Yeah,
you just immediately
it's
erased it from your memory.
Mm-hmm.
It's
I sure
like,
did.
delete trash. Oh, man. It is not trash, although today's film is self-described trash. Today's filmmaker likes to describe his films as trash.
The king of trash.
The king of trash. And boy, do I love him for how little I've actually, like, learned about him. I know. I mean, for listeners, you understand me. I'm a little distracted, and like sometimes I go hard into my interests, but other times I'm just like, I really like that, and I don't need to learn more to know that I just like it. You know, why increase my joy by learning more about it?
2024, that's the motto.
2024.
Blissfully ignorant.
Yeah. Who gives a fuck? Right.
Well, shall we talk about like what we've been doing since like during our hiatus?
Yeah, let's catch up.
Let's do it.
Who wants to go first?
Katie.
I've been taking care of a small child. She takes almost 100% of my time and working.
Just like a little one you found off the street?
Yeah, yeah. I just picked them up.
You just grew out of your lemon tree in your yard?
Yes. Yes, I grew her. I've been taking care of my little baby. She is 15 months now, almost 16 months. She just started walking, so she's giving me a literal run for my money.
Yes, I
did buy her. She's grown out of two sizes of shoes now, and so I bought her the thing the cool kids are all wearing, which is Crocs for babies.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like silver holographic ones. She looks pretty cool.
Ooh. Do they have the same size holes, aka can I send her little charms, little gibbets for her Crocs?
Yes, but I'm worried that she will eat them or they are choking hazards, so I didn't buy any.
Oh yeah, good call. They do. Some of mine have fallen off.
Yeah, and I'm like, we're just learning how to toddle around in them. But yeah, other than that, that's pretty much what takes up the majority of my time. I've been knitting a lot. Because I don't have the attention span to really focus on new media. Although I have been watching The West Wing for the first time and super duper enjoying that.
Yeah. What season are you on?
Four.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's four. I think we're in the last Sorkin season.
And yes.
I never realized it was funny. I thought it was like a serious, like political. It is very humorous.
It's hilarious.
Really very, very much enjoying the show. So nobody ruined it for me. I already kind of spoiled something for myself accidentally. that I won't do for any listeners who've never watched the show, but super duper highly recommended watching The West Wing. Says everyone who's ever lived before.
I mean, even when Sorkin leaves, it's still good.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah. I love it. I love it so much. That's all I've been doing.
Yeah. I mean, there is also something. I mean, A, you are keeping a literal human alive. Like, you are endeavoring on what I refer to parenthood as, like, the most hopeful thing you can do in the world. And also the most exhausting. Like, I'm talking to more and more of my friends who have kids under 5, and I'm just like, that sounds horrific in my mind. But then I'm just like, wow, how can I help you? So...
yeah, just
you're a better
just
person
tired.
Than me. I'm like, go. Good luck.
No, I'm just
that was your choice.
I'm just tired all the time. But
and
she,
what a choice!
She's a lot of fun. She's got a really good personality. She makes me laugh. She thinks she's starting to like make jokes and do stuff. And yeah, she's very funny.
Yes. Well, we love Lady B.
We love it.
She's our baby. Graham, would you like to go last?
I mean, sure.
We'll save best for last.
Okay.
Right? What have I been doing? I'm in year 2 of my new job. I work at an elementary school in suburban Minnesota, so in the Twin Cities. Left working in the big city, right? And by big city, we mean, like, I think there's, like, 300,000 people in Minneapolis. So, small town of a city. But, I don't know, just hanging out with my 2 very old pets that are now 12 and almost 18. And they're nearing the end, people.
I didn't realize he was 12.
My gosh. Yeah, he's 12. And we had a party over the weekend to celebrate. I finished my 2nd master's degree.
Woo! Yay!
And I turned 40 very, very soon, just a matter of a few weeks.
Yay!
So I was just like, and originally the party was for December. So I was like, oh, we'll do, we'll also incorporate the Icelandic tradition, or holiday Jólabókaflóð, which is where you exchange books and then you like sit and read. So like my party has just become book exchanges,
oh my God,
which really any party should just be a book.
Wait,
exchange.
Wait, you all like literally just sit and read?
No, I mean, we all sat and talked during it, but... I borrowed a book truck, so like a little book cart is called, from work and filled it with books. Bob was so cute. He actually bought books in advance. And I was like, dude, you were supposed to just like cull your own books. And he's like, no, but I want like these are really good books that I really like. He's like, and when we have leftovers, it's extra for our little free library that we're going to build.
Cute. So,
it was super adorable. And then he actually bought this Michael Crichton book called Travels, which is one of his like memoirs.
I love that book. I love that book.
Oh my God.
So much.
Me too.
That book is
it
amazing.
Is the reason, right? It is like I read it when I was 12, and it is the reason I wanted to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And then I chickened out the day before. And I think it's the reason why, like, part of the reason why I love travel so much. When did you read it?
I had to read it in college. It was assigned for a course. I can't remember. I want to say it was, like, the divinations course? Something like that? It was where
divination.
We had to, like, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, did you go to Hogwarts?
I know.
There are actual divination classes?
There was, yeah, because I remember in the
that was
class,
a minor
like,
in comm.
Yeah, it was something where you had to, like... They had us, like, with the pendulums, they had us do... It was a lot of energy stuff. I think it was a uni course... But
that sounds very uni.
I think it was
a sounds
uni
like
course,
some uni shit.
But yeah. No, I've read that book 20 million times because it's got my favorite opening line of almost any book, which is, "You don't realize how hard it is to cut through a human skull," something like that. Because he starts off with, because he was in medical school, Michael Crichton. It's an autobiography. And so it starts off with him in medical school and then how he decided to leave it. And he's in medical school in the 60s. Love, love, love that book so much. Cannot praise that book enough.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, obviously this is a mini, let me introduce you is everyone should read Michael Crichton's Travels.
Yes.
Otherwise, Katie, I'm with you where I still like, you know, it's 2024. We're coming up on year 4 of pandemic living, even though everything's like sort of normal, but there's also a spike.
Yeah.
You know, and we're still watching some new stuff, but I'm still just like into re-watching media. Although I will say, I just read Street Gang, which is the book about how Sesame Street got started. Did not realize when I checked it out from the library, I checked it out at the same time as Jim Henson's biography. And on my little ebook, Street Gang was 800 pages, but like 100 of it was like extra details or whatever. And Jim Henson's is 1,100 pages. And I was like, oh, whoops. So definitely did not finish Jim Henson's in the 3 weeks. So I have to renew it. But right now I needed something light and easy. So I'm reading Happy Place by Emily Henry, who is a phenomenal romance writer. Honestly, like, she is great. So that's what I've been up to. And just slightly dreading, not like dreading, but like trepidation about turning 40. Although I've been doing some lovely therapy sessions about it. So I'm starting to feel better. So that's what's up with my life. That and making like tiny habit changes. Y'all, it has been over 2 weeks and I've taken my meds every single day, which like got fucked when the pandemic happened. And my therapist and I worked out that I'm going to have like a social media fast from 9:30 p.m. to 9:30 a.m. and try to push off my dopamine hit as long as I can in the morning. And that's been going surprisingly well.
Sweet.
That's fantastic.
Awesome.
Let's just work on those little addictions.
Yeah.
You know?
Ashley, I've also read Street Gang and the Jim Henson biography, obviously. Hello.
Obviously.
And I think we've talked about this, but there's a great companion documentary about Street Gang, the book.
Oh.
So,
yes.
So fun. Great books.
Yeah, it's on my list for sure. It made me...
I think it's on HBO. I think it's on Max.
Is it on Max?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll definitely check that out. It reminded me a little bit of, like, the joy and desire and, like, fuel I had when we were in film school, because I often feel so far removed from it, because my current field has very little to do with that, right? And so I was like, oh, this is such a nice reminder. Mm-hmm. And it also makes me like retroactively feel bad of like, I can't remember a lot from when Graham did his year at Harvard and like telling things. Like you'll retell stories and I'm like, I don't remember that shit.
I never talk about Harvard though.
Okay. Well, I mean, thankfully you're not like, I mean, it was just a school in Cambridge.
I go, yeah, I went back to Boston to do grad school. Let's not talk about it.
Yeah. There's one of many schools.
Yeah.
It could have been one of any.
Yes. I didn't really do anything. I didn't do anything this past year at all. It was very...
I know, nothing.
Yeah, no. You were just so boring.
JK, it was a very busy, very crazy year for me. I got married.
Yay!
I really wish you guys could have made it. It would have been fun to have you there.
I know.
I know. You know, something came up.
You know, you guys are busy, and it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, we got married in October in Palm Springs. Shout out to the Ace Hotel.
It was lovely.
And it was lovely. It was
amazing.
Unseasonably.
It was a goddamn delight.
I mean, it's hot there, but it was unseasonably hot that time. So major kudos to all of our guests for braving the 100-degree weather.
We had beautiful fans.
Beautiful fans, beautiful
we
friends. So that was great. And just a fun year of like that leading up to it. I did my bachelor party in Puerto Vallarta. Let's not talk about it.
Yeah.
And I capped it with turning 40. Which... I was so gung-ho about, and then I turned 40, and I was like, actually, I don't know how I feel about this.
I like that you went into it with a lot of positivity.
I went in, and I, you know, my friends here put on a gorgeous dinner for me and surprised me with some messages from you two. Shout out to Dan for coordinating that, and Ben.
I had to record mine 5 times.
Oh, I went.
Because I just kept crying and messing up.
Yeah, he was like, our friend Dan was like, Graham, don't listen to that now. Wait, listen to it later. Because he's like, it's very beautiful.
I love Dan.
Yeah, but 40 is, so far, about 3 weeks into it. And, you know, you can't do anything about aging, so I'm just trying to embrace it. It's great to be told you don't look your age, but what does that even mean these days?
Exactly.
I am gung-ho right now also with my dry January, and it's been amazing so far.
Nice.
How is your sleep?
It's great.
Yeah.
I might keep it going. after this. Like, no more. I think I might see how long I can go without drinking.
Okay.
Go for it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm California sober, so.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, like.
I gotta have my gummies.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be coming up on, like, 5 years of sobriety soon, and, like, there are just a lot of health benefits. And when you think about it, like, being California sober, like, weed and whatever else, like, it just doesn't hit you as hard.
My skin feels different.
Really?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it already feels different, which is good. But back to thematically of y'all watching older stuff. Yeah, I basically have seen everything that's going to be up for Oscars. And I think it's been, and we could talk about this later, but like, I think it's been a fantastic year for movies. There's so many wonderful things out there. Such a diverse crop of films. Really, really excited about award season because... it's just, there's usually a dud, and there isn't really like this massive dud out there, which I really like, unfortunately. But what I've been watching that is old, but it's my first watch through, is L.A. Law.
I don't know if I've ever seen
it. Oh my God, I'm obsessed. It ran from 1986 to 1994, won every Emmy for like outstanding drama series, and a lot of won for it. Harry Hamlin, Corbin Burnson, Jill Eikenberry, Blair Underwood, Jimmy Smits. It is
Blair Underwood.
Wow.
Yeah, he comes in season two.
Why did you choose to watch L.A. Law?
I needed a hour-long drama to watch when I'm working from home to have on in the background. And I hope nobody from work listens because I get very distracted and just like will not do work and focus on the case of the week. It's great. It's so fun to watch it. I mean... even though it's the late 80s, it's still a lot of it is prescient today of like, and it shows you how much has not changed. But it's so fun. I really recommend it for people who want like a fun 45-minute drama to watch. Concurrently, we're also watching the early 1990s Alaskan comedy drama Northern Exposure.
Nice. Which did is you now know on, that the... the Northern Exposure DVDs used to come in like a puffer vest.
Yeah, my brother-in-law has all of them. And I've never watched it.
Of course
it.
He does.
So this is my plea to keep this theme of this era's hour-long dramas. Please somebody put 30-something on a streaming service. I need to watch it. I need to watch Sisters. I need to watch Once and Again. Please get those out there for me because I need to keep this going. I'm having so much fun with all of these.
You should get, like, Plex and then figure out somebody else who has all these things, who's, like, pirated them from somewhere.
Somebody give it to me. I need to watch. It's all the stuff that, like, my mom watched. And I'm like, yeah, I can get why she loved all this stuff.
Yes.
Speaking of streaming, where did you guys watch today's movie? Because I was trying to find it for free, and I could not.
Amazon. I rented it.
That's where I did, too.
Yeah.
I rented it on Apple TV because it was cheaper, I think.
It was 30 cents cheaper.
Yeah, I told Nick, I was like, I owe you $4.30-something, Ari.
Yeah. Well, let's get into this.
Just yeah, Venmo him, you know, but make sure it's on public.
Yeah.
So. We'll talk about that at another time. Why y'all putting all your Venmo transactions on public? It's weird to me. All right, so today we are getting into a movie that I bet you can guess which one of us has not seen it. I
don't know.
Originally.
I'm surprised Katie hasn't seen this.
Nope. No, I saw it. I saw it in the video store. Like, I remember the cover, but we never watched it.
Yeah, I guess it is a little bit surprising. So today... we are watching the 1994, dare I say, masterpiece by John Waters, Serial Mom. I was first introduced to John Waters through Crybaby. And I, like, you know, most of my childhood memories, can't remember them super well. So I'm pretty sure it was just one of those things that was streaming on cable or Comedy Central.
Streaming on cable. You mean
Oh, my
airing.
God. Oh, my God. Airing. Oh.
Okay, Gen Alpha. You know.
Thank you. Oh. It was appointment TV. And, no, I'm sure I just, like... went into the basement trying to get away from my brothers to watch the thing that I want and started watching Crybaby and was really into it. I actually think I didn't watch Hairspray until I was an adult. I know, right? And I've never actually seen Pink Flamingos, which is just shocking because I'm like, oh yeah, John Waters, I like him. But then I like haven't dived into a lot of his other stuff. Yeah, today I will be leading us as best I can through this with my minimal research. Don't tell anyone I'm a librarian and I'm supposed to be good at it. But we would love to hear a synopsis from one of our loves on the show. The one who I always hear when people talk about our podcast, they always say, I'm a Graham.
Ah, I love that. I love my fans. So I'm going to pull an Ashley and wing this because we decided we were going to do this right before we recorded. So here
I
go.
2 seconds, yeah.
I love it.
All right.
No time limit,
but I'm going to go quick because I can't wait to dive into this. So we are in upper middle class Maryland suburbs, and we meet Beverly Sutphin, played by Kathleen Turner. And she is this prim and proper, perfect housewife with her husband, Sam Watterson, who's a orthodontist, and two college-age kids, played by one Ricky Lake, and in his film debut, Matthew Lillard.
Yeah.
She's like kind of like a love-struck woman. Ricky Lake's like the love-struck daughter, and Matthew Lillard works at a video store and loves horror movies. And so everything looks super perfect, and we think, wow, what a great mom Beverly Sutphin is. And then suddenly the cops show up at her door, questioning people in the neighborhood about a neighbor, Dottie, who is receiving very very nasty phone calls harassing her at her home. And Beverly is like, oh my goodness, that's so awful. I'm such good friends with Dottie. And, you know, we'll keep a lookout on who could be, you know, doing such a horrible thing. You've come to find out that Beverly Sutphin is the one doing these obscene phone calls to Dottie, and sets off this sort of like, okay, things are not as they seem. And so what ends up happening is that Beverly Sutphin is a serial killer, and she ends up killing a bunch of people in this movie for doing the smallest things. They could be, reprimanding her son for not paying attention in school, for... what was another one?
A boyfriend kind of ditching the daughter.
Yeah, the girlfriend's crush, like rejecting him, even though he made it clear he didn't like the girl to begin, like the daughter to begin with. The parents of a friend of Matthew Lillard's, because they kind of like made fun of her husband's orthodontist prices.
The woman who didn't rewind.
Who didn't rewind her tapes at the video store. So it's all these slight things, because Beverly is like very proper and like very about manners, and there's no gum in her house and you have to recycle. Mm-hmm. And so she's eventually like caught after killing all these people, and she becomes a minor celebrity. And there's a whole case that she ends up representing herself in court. She ends up getting off scot-free because she's very convincing at making people, get on her side because she's so charming. Susan Summer shows up because she's going to be playing Beverly Sutphin in a made-for-TV movie, and the film ends with Beverly Sutphin killing one of the jurors because she was wearing white shoes after Labor Day. And that is the plot of Serial Mom.
That's it.
Yes.
That is lovely. That is lovely. You did great.
Thanks.
Very good.
Should I do box office really quick?
Yes, please.
All right.
If you can do box office, then I want to hear reactions.
So this opened April 15th, 1994.
Okay.
Released by Savoy Pictures, which is defunct. That was only around for a couple of years. It was only released in 500 theaters its opening weekend, so it opened at number 11.
Okay.
With $2 million and finished up about $7.9 million, so it did not make back its budget. Opened the same weekend as Cops and Robbersons. Anyone?
Nope.
That's familiar,
Chevy
but I can't remember.
It has Chevy Chase and Jack Palance and Diane Weist in it. White Fang 2, Myth of the White Wolf.
Oh, okay.
Man, it didn't beat these movies?
No, it didn't. And then the other things that were open around that time, number one that weekend was Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Oh, sure.
You had D2, The Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Paper with Ron Howard's The Paper with Glenn Close and Michael Keaton. And this was also around Oscar time. It was also around Oscar time, so Schindler's List was still in the theaters. So that so ultimately did not do well, but has since become quite a classic.
I also, when I was doing my research for this, John Waters said that the weekend it opened was a really nice spring weekend, like, across the whole country. So they didn't think about how, like, oh, yeah, people would be out tending their gardens and being outdoors. So.
Much like Beverly Sutphin would have done.
Yeah.
Yes. And sorting her recycling. Mm-hmm. Bob saw that part and he goes, oh, remember sorting your recycling?
Yes.
All right. As the resident person we are foisting our film upon, Katie, love to get some of your reactions.
So I'm obviously familiar with John Waters, but I don't think I've seen a full John Waters movie. Like, so I've not seen any.
Oh my God, Katie, really?
In their entirety.
No.
You're missing out,
like,
girl.
I've seen, this was the first one. Because I've seen, like, maybe parts of Pink Flamingos, maybe. I've never seen Hairspray. I've seen The Crybaby on Broadway, but I didn't see the movie.
We went.
Nope.
I took you to see Broadway, The Crybaby on Broadway.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this was my first.
Where was I?
My
living
first
in the Midwest.
John Waters experience. And so I kind of knew he was, like, culty and, like, I know his thing, but I'd never seen any of it. So I remember, like I said, I remember seeing this movie in the movie theater. I remember the cover. I love Kathleen Turner. And I thought this was super duper fun. I was sitting there on the couch laughing. I thought it was like the tongue-in-cheek sarcasm, like, juxtaposition of how the family shone with her being a lunatic. But the thing is like, she doesn't care. She doesn't care about being caught. She doesn't care about, like, what people think of her. If people see her, she doesn't cover her tracks. Like, none of that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, not very good in a serial killer sense that way.
But she gets off in the trial. So I thought it was
and
a lot of fun. I was overjoyed to see, of course, Matthew Lillard in this. And seeing Matthew Lillard, like, in my head, I'm like, this is basically Stu. And it's just Stu 2 years prior.
Right, because he plays a serial killer 2 years later. Yeah.
Yes. So seeing him play a serial killer who's obsessed with horror movies, Stu doesn't work in the video store, but seeing that was really a lot of fun. I like seeing how, like, just wonderful and prim and, like, put together Mrs. Sutphin is, and then she'll just, like, kill some real quick. The blood is really fun. It was a really good time. My only criticism was that it felt a little long. I felt like the part where the police know that she is the killer and then wait until, like, the church to go after her, and then there's, like, another murder and stuff. I was like, trim this down a little bit, because then I paused it and I'm like, oh God, we still have, like, half an hour left because we have, like, the trial and everything. I thought it was great. I love Sam Waterston. You know, he's fabulous. It was a really great movie. Enjoyed very much.
Yay!
Yay! Oh my God. I always love when we pick one that you like.
Katie's written all over this movie, actually.
I mean, I would hope so. I do love sometimes when you hate it, just because, you know, I love a hater. I love feeling that, like, tension between us. But it does always feel like a victory when you pick a film that you're like, oh my God, you haven't seen that yet. And then your friends like it and, like, it still holds up.
I did enjoy it. It was fun. I'm glad I finally saw it. I also like the coloring of everything. Like, everything was very, like, Laura Ashley florals, like, you know, it was fun.
Nice.
Enjoyed.
Graham, what were you thinking upon rewatching this?
This movie has been a part of my life since it came out. I think Kathleen Turner might be my favorite actress. Mm. I've come to this realization over the years. But when it came out, first of all, Hairspray was huge in our house. I remember watching that very, very early on. And so that was John Waters, at the time. I don't think he's made a PG-13 movie since. But that was his first, like, family-friendly movie. And I remember when that film came out, he was like, when I heard that Hairspray got a PG rating, I nearly killed myself. Because he's, like, known for shock humor. And so when I heard, when I saw, I don't know why, but I was like, oh, John Waters, he made Hairspray. That's a fun movie. I want to see Serial Mom. And granted, I was 10 when this movie came out. So I remember when it was in Jacksonville, it was only playing in one screen. Obviously, I couldn't go see it in movie theaters. Like, my parents are going to take me to go see that. So I conned it. So when the movie came out on video, I conned it so that I would stay at my grandparents that weekend. And I would rent it with them because they would have no idea.
Wow.
What this movie was.
Great, I'm so impressed.
So when I picked it up and said, I want to get this, I put my finger over the rating so they wouldn't see that it was R-rated. And I remember going to watch it that night when I stayed at their house, and I was like, this movie is my personality now. I think it's so funny. And it was just so arched and crazy and silly. And it was just something that I was like, I'm different from the rest of the kids at school. this is something I kind of like clued into very young. So it was very much like a movie that I watched constantly through like grade school, junior high, high school. And so I have a huge soft spot for this movie. I think watching it again, I hadn't seen it for probably 15 years. Watching it again, like, this is happening today with the glamorization of, like, murderers. Absolutely. Gypsy, yeah. Rose Blanchard, everyone. Like, how much of his films are still with Hairspray, with, like, Crybaby, Pink Flamingos, Polyester. Like, a lot of the themes, like, are still prevalent today. Everyone is so dialed in to their roles that made it such a joy. I mean, Kathleen Turner is giving the performance of her life, her facial expressions of being outraged about everything happening in her house. When she's about to kill the couple who's eating eating turkey or chicken their table, and she's thinking lamb. Back to all lamb?
No. When she's killing...
Oh, you mean the couple. I'm sorry.
And she's thinking back to the birds in her... in her front lawn that she's obsessed with, and she just goes, this is a visual medium, not a visual medium, but her face goes, she's so outraged.
But it was shot so well.
I'm
watching this, and it's just zooming in on how they're like tearing at it and pulling the bones out. And I turn to Bob and I go, I think I might need to become a vegetarian.
I know, I was like, oh, this looks gross. The scene where the woman is singing Annie. And the sun will come out tomorrow. She's letting her dog lick her feet, which is grotesque. One of the most grotesque things that John Waters ever put in a movie. And then getting literally beaten to death with a leg of lamb is... I was like, that was one of my favorite scenes in movies for so, so long. But yeah, Sam Waterston, I really loved his performance this time because he's just the shock of this, like... He's like, what is going on? Ricky Lake, Matthew Lillard, and I'm going to call it two other cast members. Dottie Hinkle, who is the neighbor who is getting the obscene phone calls, played by Mink Stole, which is one of John Waters' constant... She's always in every single one of his movies.
She's the only one who's been in every single
film. Yeah, she's so amazing in her role. The rage, her haircut, walking into the courtroom with that, like... Mink Stole on, you know?
And it's such like a late 80s, early 90s thing where you have like the scarf stole thing on like your shoulder to look like classier, you know?
It was so good. It was so good. And then the neighbor, Rosemary, played by Mary Jo Catlett, who apparently is a voice on SpongeBob. Her performance is amazing too. Do you recycle? And the way she says no is so good.
No.
And then, you know, Patty Hearst, right?
Oh my God, Patty Hearst. And also, as the juror with white shoes.
Yeah, isn't Suzanne Somers looking like, I think it's the best Suzanne Somers ever looked on.
She looked really good.
She looked stunning.
She looked phenomenal. I also, like, I was looking at her outfit. You know, she's wearing, because, like, 90s fashion is back, right? So she's wearing her, like, black-brimmed hat, but it's, like, the, it's not, like, cowboy style, you know? It's, like, sort of almost, like, flat top-ish, right? And a white shirt, and then, like, the 90s jeans, and she looks so fit, and she's got her black leather jacket on, and I'm like, ooh, I've been struggling with 90s fashion coming back, but I am into that.
And her shirt says Beverly Hills on it. Yes. Obviously it does.
Obviously.
She's a movie star.
I was surprised to see Tracy Lords.
Yeah. Well, she's in a bunch of his films too. Yeah.
I was so excited because I like Tracy Lords was in one of the movies that I did effects on.
Right.
Yeah, she was in a movie called Crazy Eight that I helped our former guest Jeremy do effects on, and she pulls her own eyes out in the movie. So anytime I see Tracy Lords, I'm like, support for Tracy Lords.
so good.
I love that. I couldn't think of it right away when you were sharing it, Graham, but when Beverly Sutphin murders with the lamb, it's a total nod to the Roald Dahl short story, yes. Lamb to the Slaughter.
Yes, right? That's one of my all-time favorite stories.
Right, like, you see her, like, purposefully giving the dog some lamb, so, like, getting him ready before, so that...
Oh, I just thought she was
like,
being nice.
Oh, I mean, maybe it was a little bit of that, but, like, I wanted to interpret it as, like, the only time she was sort of covering her tracks, because for all the rest, it's not great, right? Like, it's...
I mean, she's running over the teacher in broad daylight at the school.
Oh, like, she don't care.
Broad daylight. And yeah, not just once, but, like, hitting him and then reversing, right? Yeah, chewing gum and then implying that there's something wrong with her parenting because he's so into horror films, right? Mm-hmm. And essentially implying that there's something wrong with her because she has her little, like, what is it? It's in her bedside table. She has all the clippings of, like, murderers, and then her husband pulls out, is, like, checking under the bed, and then pulls out from underneath the mattress. There's these correspondence, and there are tapes sent to Beverly from Charles Manson, being like, Beverly, it's 6 days until my execution.
The Ted Bundy
one. Which was voiced by John. Yes, Ted Bundy.
That was John Waters' voice.
That made me laugh. I love that.
Oh my God, it was just, like, absurd. And I love how Sam Waterston, like Mr. Sutphin is still just, like, still so standing by his woman, like, played the straight man till the end, right? And I was just like, oh my God, it is the type of absurd that I understand. Like, there's some absurdist humor now that I'm like, I don't get it. But what I love about John Waters is that, like, there are so many things that are connected and everything he makes is satirical, right? Like, it's always just kind of like he's pushing the envelope, but in a very intelligent way.
Yeah. This movie was also the first sex scene I ever saw in a movie.
That sex scene was
my first sex scene was Kathleen Turner and Sam Waterston, and I was like
bouncing
so
horizontally.
That's what it's like.
They put a trampoline under the bed to make that so bouncy.
And I remember that I didn't know what the P word was.
I would never.
And
use
I remember
that word.
Thinking that it was like, oh, it's like a cat. Yeah. And I went home after watching it, and I kept being like calling my sister a pee face. And my mom was like, that's not, don't say that.
Don't, Graham.
So with her, like, when she sits down and, like, watches the horror movie with Matthew Lillard, with her son, and I'm like, they're spending quality time together and watching something that they both enjoy. And I'm like, oh God, am I going to be the mom that, like, introduces my daughter to all these horror movies?
I mean, a little bit, right?
Well, she'll probably think they're uncool because I like them, but...
Or maybe she'll be super into them.
Yeah.
Because you'll have raised your child.
I mean, didn't your dad introduce you to all of them?
Yeah, that's true.
And look how you turned out.
I know.
That's a compliment.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks.
I realized that my tone was like a little... I was like, no, that was... I meant that as a good thing.
I like that it was on the edge. Is it? Oh, man. There have been some really good articles and things that were written about this. I'm not going to obviously recap all of them, but I highly encourage, if you are interested in Serial Mom, to go read them. Actually, one that I didn't do great research before. Sorry, y'all. But I was actually just reading one on RogerEbert.com where it was essentially an interview with John Waters and just kind of reflecting back. And he got away from the idea of saying things are camp, and calls himself, you know, like calls his films like filth or trash. And actually at the Academy Museum in LA right now, there is an entire exhibit of, it's called John Waters, Pope of Trash, and it runs through the summer. So I am going to be going to LA and needing to see that, because yes. It yes. either wasn't on or I didn't realize it was on when we were back there in October. But I was like, oh no, I'll have to go see Katie and my brother and like all my LA friends. Yes, Graham will plan a weekend. Yes. And
he's got a book out with the same name too.
Oh, all right. Yeah, my brother got me one of John Waters, books. I want to say it was like the road trip one. I should remember. I don't think I ever actually finished it. And then I went away for a friend's like bachelorette weekend and I was reading another John Waters book. So it's like, I'm interested. I just can't remember everything. But yeah, I don't know.
Summary of all things so far. This podcast has been, I started reading this book, but I haven't finished it.
Yeah.
I finished a 700 page book on Sesame Street, y'all. So
I know you read books. It's just funny. It was like the Henson one. And then this one, it was a bunch. I'm just like, the theme of today is books I start and don't finish.
Books I start. Listen, y'all, I was actually thinking about this recently where I was like, 90% of the books in my house are things that I've bought. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I'll read that someday. And then I just don't. So, you know,
we have a hard rule.
That's what it is.
That we have to finish the books we read before we buy anything else.
It's a tough rule.
That sounds terrible.
It's cost effective.
Yeah, but like, it's great to spend money on books. Like, that's one of my favorite
in
things.
In this economy?
yeah, because... Yeah.
I did buy
We are trying to support independent booksellers, and...
I know, I bought my 1,000-page Barbara memoir. I can't wait to dive into that.
See, I'm just trying to live up to the famous John Waters quote that I love... And to also date myself, used as my Facebook banner for a while.
I remember
but
this.
I honestly, like, if I were to go back, I hope never, have to start dating again, I would just put that up as a picture, because I hear the dating scene's rough right now. But one of his most famous quotes, and my most favorite, is, if you go home with somebody and they don't have books, don't fuck them.
Yeah.
True.
So don't fuck people without books.
You know. I once saw him in San Francisco.
Really?
Just walking down the street.
Tell us everything.
And while he was walking down the street, and I was like looking down, looked up, made eye contact, and went, John Waters! And then I just kept walking. And I was like super embarrassed. And he was just like, he like gave a little nod. And I was like, oh God, Graham, you just moved here. Grow up.
You know what? I bet he appreciated it.
Yeah.
I bet he wasn't like, oh, I didn't have to stop my day. I see that someone appreciated me and I could just keep going about.
Can I touch upon the casting of this movie really quick?
Please. Absolutely.
So he offered this to a lot of people. Meryl Streep, Kathy Bates, Julie Andrews.
It's so weird.
And then Susan Sarandon was on for a bit. Attached to it, and ultimately they couldn't afford her because his movies don't have big budgets.
Yeah,
and a lot of the problems he had casting it were the people he wanted in it. They were like, "Well, I'll do it, but can you not make her so malicious? Can you make her more likable?" And he's like, "No, that's not the purpose of this character." And Kathleen Turner was the first actress that was like, "I'm playing her exactly how you want it. Like, I see what you're doing here." And then even Michael Douglas was like, "I don't think you should do this movie, Kathleen." And she's like, "I'm still doing it."
I thought she was likable the way that Kathleen.
And that's what's so good about her performance. I mean, I think we do have an unreleased episode of a Kathleen Turner movie, Baby Geniuses.
I think about that movie all the time now. Thank you.
Same.
Because of
you're welcome.
Of my daughter, and she's on the verge of talking.
She's,
so I think
she's
about
being
it
baby.
She's
baby genius.
She's baby geniusing.
But let this be the actual first time we talk about Kathleen Turner on this podcast. I love her. I think she just is such a brilliant comedian in this performance, and in general. But back to, like, her facial expressions, just her... I mean, you kind of do sympathize with her a little bit. Like, when she first gets arrested, I'm like, well, no, don't arrest Beverly, even though she's murdered seven people. And then one of my favorite things that she did that John Waters didn't even realize she did.
Yes. Oh my God, yes.
Until he screened it for an audience is in the car chase, which Katie, you were saying like it was going on a little bit too long. The family is like parked at like an intersection and Scotty's car drives by with the Justin Whalen character. And then Beverly comes by in her minivan that she's essentially stolen.
Right, the tan one, yeah.
If you look closely, she just goes, she, like, waves to her family, like, hi! Like, yeah. Hi to her family.
I thought it was
and like, and, like, he didn't that. Even know she did that. And he's like, well, I'm keeping it in there. So, just, like, these little ways of her, like, interjecting these just, like, very funny moments you wouldn't expect from the script. Mm-hmm. I love it. I just think why she wasn't nominated for Best Actress. It was a... I'm not kidding. Because that year was not a great year for Best Actress. I mean, Jessica Lange won for Blue Sky. Has anyone heard of that movie?
Nope.
No, except Jessica Lange and Tommy Lee Jones because they're in it. she should have been nominated. I'm just saying.
No, I agree. I thought she was delightful. She does everything with such, I was going to say poise, but also a giant smile because she knows that if she gets caught, it's not a big deal. Like
she's gonna get off.
She does not care. The only thing she cares about are these tiny little infractions that, honestly, only she can see.
And her family. She loves her family.
She does. She fiercely loves her family.
Oh.
There were some people, like, in researching this, there are some articles that, like, critiqued her for, like, playing it too straight or it should have been more campy. And Kathleen Turner's like, no, you don't get it. Like... the way that she played it was perfect, right? Because it's not going to the point of camp. Like, it's satire. And that is such a fine line to do satire well. And for people to not realize, like, this is a black comedy. It's a satirical black comedy. And it's such a fine line to thread. And she fucking nails it. Like, you don't want to see her being more, like, winkingly this or that. Like, she commits to what the role is and embodies it so well. And one of the things that John Waters says, like, about his films, the people in them, like, they know that they are right. You know, she didn't, I mean, he says, like, you know, perhaps it was an overreaction to murder people, but they're still following, like, that moral code, right? And this was also a time of, like, when things are too, like, politically correct or, like, people acting as though they're progressive, but they're actually, like, deeply conservative. And it's like, no, she knew her values. And it was, like, it was straight from jump, like, straight from that opening scene when, you know, the family's having their, like, typical, like, lovely breakfast. And she's like, who wants this or that or whatever? And they're talking about, like, some death row inmate getting his college degree. And she's like, just, like... you know, kind of being like, well, you know, it's fine. And at one point she goes, well, everybody has a bad day, you know. She's like, oh my God.
Well, and that kind of wraps it up at the end when the prosecutor's like, she is a murderer, she's a murderer. And then Matthew Lillard goes, well, they all kind of deserved it. Like,
well, that's something I wanted to ask you too, is because, so it opens with the title cards, and there's like several title cards where it's like, this is a true story or this is taken from real events and character, blah, blah, blah. It was giving me very like Monty Python opening vibes. And then at the end, it's got the thing where it was like, you know, Mrs. Sefton was declined to be interviewed for this, whatever. That was the only part that felt a little weird. Like, I don't think it needed it. And I wanted to ask you guys what you thought. Like, why did he include that? Or did you think it was needed or not needed?
Okay, so I have a connection. I felt a connection between this and May December.
Okay.
The movie that came out with the Todd Haynes film. Have you seen it?
Yes, I did.
No. So I feel
also very like it felt very was it Twin Pines or Twin Peaks?
Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
I feel like both of those films are making commentaries on like these like Lifetime movie killer of the week sensationalizing true crime murder, and they're kind of having this making fun of how we as people ingest this as entertainment value.
That's
a good
point.
So she's killing but very different modes of getting that point across, whereas like I feel like May December, which I thought personally was my favorite movie of last year, takes more like it's a comedy but not clearly a comedy, and it's more of like a commentary of like the viewer themselves and the people who profit off of those stories. This was just like, okay, we're just gonna have fun with this and just like dial in to, we're clearly making fun of like how obsessed we are as a society on your murder crime. And murder where you least expect it.
I think it too is that in the way it's a little bit of its time of how it was satirizing society, because when you think about it, that is a lot of it. And like, think about like what comes to mind is like Law and Order, right? Where it has the title cards about like, what is the date? What is the time? And really following that. It seems like now the way that folks really obsess about true crime is a lot through podcasts and a lot through like other documentary type styles, right? Or it's a podcast based on a real thing and then they dramatize it. Yeah. And so it's gotten away from like the title card type of thing. But I saw it as just like taking the satire even further, because it's not actually based on a single true story, right? It is satirizing the obsession. I love that it said like no one was compensated for it, right? And just like other things. But yeah, I took it more, and maybe it's because I had done the research and like had read about that, but that was just kind of more where my like vibe was of like, okay, just take this more as satire, put it more like at the time, because like when it came out was like after O.J. Simpson had done everything, but like we hadn't finished the trial, right? So it was like kind of
was it during that time, really?
Yeah, because it was right around that time. I can't remember which article I was reading, because it wasn't until like 1996 that the trial like wrapped up and we got the verdict. But I hear what you're saying, because like if you're not as used to it, or we're not remembering what true crime was like then, it's easy to kind of forget those like smaller pieces, right? Yeah. But it would have just been like nail on the head at the time that it was released.
Yeah. Ashley, as you were talking about how Kathleen Turner played the character, this is a total swing.
Swing hard like
when you
like
have
a
performance that like we all like think completely kills it and they're so dialed in perfectly. I'm thinking of Michael Caine in A Muppet Christmas Carol.
Where
when he was asked about it, he goes, I'm gonna play this like it's Shakespeare. Like I will not pretend that any of them are Muppets. And I'm like, that is when you have a great like adept performer in your role that really understands what you're doing.
Yeah, the meme I saw on that was Michael Caine plays in his Muppet movie as if he is cast with Shakespearean actors.
Yeah.
And Tim Curry plays his character in Treasure Island as if he is a Muppet. So
yes.
God. And I love that performance too. I love Muppet Christmas. I love both of those movies, obviously. But Katie, does this make you want to maybe you want to watch other John Waters movies?
So that's the thing. I know we haven't gotten to our end sequence yet, but I like this. I don't ever see myself rewatching it. Like, I don't ever see me sitting down and wanting to put this on. I don't know. It could be because I don't have the same like personal connection to it. Like, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. If someone else is like, yeah, do you want to watch this movie? I'd be like, okay, I'll pay like 50% attention. But I don't think I'd rewatch it again. For time's sake. I don't know if I'll watch any. I've never seen Hairspray.
Guys, Hairspray is so...
Hairspray is a goddamn delight.
Good.
I've never seen any of the John Waters movies.
It is so good. He said Zero Mom is his favorite movie that he's made. Mm-hmm. Hairspray is so, so delightful. Also, it's PG, obviously.
This is not the John Travolta one.
No, this is like from 1988. Ricky Lake, divine.
Okay.
Like, Sonny Bono's in it. Deborah Harry is in it.
It is
so, so good. Pia Zadora shows up in it. But yeah, Katie, I think you should watch Hairspray for sure.
I think I would watch it.
Yeah, I don't think you would. I don't think you would enjoy Crybaby. I recently rewatched it, and it
doesn't hold up.
It doesn't hit the same way, right? Yeah, like how it was. I definitely got a lot of fashion inspiration from like the 50s pinup or whatever. But yeah, it's not the same. It does make me want to. So, Katie, I remember you were talking about like earlier pandemic, y'all were going through like directors and watching their filmographies. And so it does make me kind of want to go through and watch the things that I haven't. And just try to get my mindset in what was going on at the time that it was being made. And specifically, like with John Waters, you really have to think like he truly makes more like independent, like underground vibe. You know what I mean? Like you have to think his goal is satire and to be like, you know, the Pope of trash, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing A Dirty Shame come out, or like seeing things for it in college. And I was just like, I don't know whatever was going on in my brain, but I didn't make a connection. I was like, this is fucking weird, you know, and not realizing like, oh, I'm looking at it through the lens of like, I'm 2 years into film school and like this pretentious fuck or whatever, you know, and not realizing like what it is.
That was NC-17.
I remember. Yeah,
well,
for
I mean,
it,
but Selma Blair. What I think is interesting, I remember it was years ago, and it was either in a book I was reading about John Waters or like a recent article. And Graham, maybe you and I have talked about this, but the kind of films that he makes are just not like the budget, whatever. Like they're just not getting made anymore. And he has specifically said, like, you know, the reason he hasn't made something in. I mean, A Dirty Shame came out in 2020 and his other stuff were like videos and whatever. Like the reason he hasn't made it is because he can make more money doing other things.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get the level of funding that he wants. It's either you find somebody who made something on like a really, really small budget, or it's these like $100 million things. And it's like narrowed the field of what's being made.
Yeah. He does have something in production now. He has he's adapting his book Liar Mouth, and because Dirty Shame came out in 2004, so this will be 20 plus years since, and apparently Aubrey Plaza is attached or in talks to be in it, which I think is a good fit for him.
I'm really curious to see what kind of performance he can get out of her.
You bring up something interesting, Ashley, about like mid-budget stuff right now, because I'm wondering, I think 2023 taught the film business some lessons, some hard-earned lessons about audience rejection of superhero, big budget, like everything that was supposed to make a ton of money didn't. Mm-hmm. Like Marvel's Aquaman, The Flash, Blue Beetle, Shazam, Mission Impossible, Indiana Jones, like Transformers, these all underperformed. And what
they were like not even a blip on
not even a blip. And what's like one of the biggest hits of the Christmas season was Anyone But You. That rom-com.
I wanted to see that. I hadn't seen it yet.
With Glenn Powell. And it costs like $25 million to make. It's gonna make three times that. And like I feel like there's been opportunities this year for smaller things. Iron Claw made over $30+ million.
Oh my God, I've heard it's amazing.
Iron Claw is really good, but it's devastating. And Zac Efron in any other year would be in the Best Actor Oscar race. And I'm not kidding. He is that phenomenal in that movie. But I do think coming off a great year of like really great art, I'm wondering if there's going to be some kind of recalibration of like maybe we could go back to making some more Anyone But You's, make more $30 million budget movies, because clearly people want to go see these things because they're tired of superheroes.
I know.
Yeah.
For Marvels to bomb that badly, granted, sexism, and racism. But Aquaman doing that badly, like, the only hit was, like, Guardians that did well.
Yeah, I haven't seen the other Guardians. I didn't see Aquaman. But Aquaman did very well internationally, the first one. I don't know how this one is performing that well.
Oh, not well.
Well, that's a bummer. Bummer for my company. But, yeah. But yeah, I have not enjoyed, from a story perspective, any of the Marvel releases. I actually did like the Flash movie, but I don't know, people did not enjoy it. And I didn't see Blue Beetle. But, I mean, as someone who lives in this stuff literally every day of their life, I'm tired, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look at the top three of the year. It was Barbie, Super Mario, and Oppenheimer. An R-rated 3-hour film made $370 million domestically.
I know. It makes me very interested to see where superheroes are going to go, especially with Superman Legacy coming up. So.
Yeah.
I think audiences are just more intelligent than we're being given credit for, you know?
I disagree. I think people are getting dumber. Okay. You know why I say that? It's because people think Saltburn's a good movie. They're like, whoa, Saltburn, what a twist. I'm like, how did you not see this? Go watch other movies. You know?
Okay. So I'm only getting, like, my movie whatever stuff from Instagram, right? And everybody's talking about Saltburn. I have not seen a trailer. I've just seen buzz about it. I'm like, I literally know nothing about this fucking film. And also, Graham, you just said talking about Wonka. Can we talk about how, like, now recent musicals are not being marketed as musicals? Like, you don't know going in? I didn't know Wonka was a musical.
Same.
I mean, foolishly that I shouldn't, but...
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. Wonka was delightful.
I don't think the original, like, the Gene Wilder one was marketed as a musical either.
No.
Yeah.
But this one is, like...
Like, hard musical? Hard end?
There's a lot of choreography, and I loved it. It's choreography and whimsy.
I did not see it, but...
It's really fun. It is really... A little long, but it's the director of Paddington 2, y'all. So, come on.
That's true. It's just that level of CG rubs me the wrong way. It makes me never really want to see something, so...
True.
Okay, visually, do you feel like Wonka is something you should see on a big screen? Because I feel like with Paddington 2... If that got re-released in theaters, I would want to go do that.
Oh, we're going to...
Visually, just like Paddington, so many that I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. When Paddington in Peru is released, we're going to go all see it together, right? Next year?
Yeah. If Vanna can handle movies by then, I'm going to take her.
I don't know. I don't know, Ashley. I think... I don't like going to the movies where there are... Sorry, Katie. Where there are children, because I don't like to hear them. So there were a lot of children in our screening. So...
You've got to go to a later at night show.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, we went to see It Chapter 2, and somebody brought their young kids, and it was like a 9 o'clock showing. Yeah. And I was like, first off, I don't think your children are old enough to see this. Secondly, it is late at night.
But I wonder. I wonder if there's going to be a shift. There has to be. Like, this is all cyclical, right? I mean, look at all the big budget bonanzas from the 50s and 60s, and then look what happened. The 1970s happened with like more personal filmmaking, and more director-driven material. I don't know. We'll see. I think there's a bust happening right now. So I'm hopeful, because I mean, if he's making something, and hopefully it does actually get made, we need more of that, like, kind of gonzo filmmaking back in the theaters.
I'm all with you. I want the mid-list you know, rom-coms of like the 2000s and the 90s, because they're fun to watch. Then they, like, I don't, that's the big thing too about movies right now, is I don't want it to feel like a homework assignment. I want to be able to go and just consume it, because we're all tired as a society right now. Everyone's exhausted.
There was a last week, I did a 1-2-3 punch of The Iron Claw, Anatomy of a Fall, and then All of Us Strangers.
Oh, I wanted to see that.
And those are all really intense, emotional movies.
Was this like one per day, or you did
Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and then at the end, like, we came home and I was like, I just need to watch something funny. Put on L.A. Law. Wait, put on something joyful.
Good?
I need to watch something funny. Put on L.A. Love.
L.A. Okay, that's a complicated question to ask a gay man about All of Us Strangers. Okay. There were elements of it that I thought were great. I think there's a swing at the end that did not work for me, but I'm willing to let that go because 80% of the movie I really, really liked.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, because I love Andrew Scott. I want to support like whatever he does.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
Yeah. Do you know what it's about?
No, all I can tell from the trailer is just like time travel, love, sort of science fiction-y. And I'm like, that looks kind of cool. That's all
I know
about it.
It's a fantasy. It's a fantasy. Going knowing that it's a fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys see Maestro?
Yes.
What did you
No, but I've heard good things.
Look, I really liked it. And okay. I know that online people are like, ew, he's such a tryhard. All he wants is an Oscar. They all want an Oscar.
Very true.
And you know what? He lost to fucking Rami Malek for that garbage Bohemian Rhapsody movie.
Agreed.
When he should have won for A Star is Born. And you know what? That film felt like a movie. And what I mean by that is there were swings, there were fun camera movements, there were fun sequences. That 6-minute sequence where he conducts Mahler's Resurrection, I cried. And not all of it works, but I'm happy he did it, and I'm happy for him.
Okay.
What about you, Kitty?
I did not enjoy it because I felt like I had seen that movie 20 million times already.
Okay.
I feel like you've seen the same storyline, you've seen the relationship, you've seen the time period. I was like I
Where did you see it before?
I don't know. It feels like it's like, oh, here's any, you
back
know,
it up,
couple.
Back it up.
I enjoyed Carrie Mulligan. I thought her performance was very good. Bradley Cooper's performance was fine. I wanted to see more of the music. I wanted to see more of what makes Leonard Bernstein, Leonard Bernstein, other than his that one scene of him conducting in the cathedral. But like they just like blip some of his like
they do
film credits.
I wonder if he kept it under 2 hours, which thank you for that.
True.
It could have used more.
About halfway through it, I was like, I don't need to see the rest of this.
You gotta watch the whole movie to have an opinion about it, Katie.
I understand where it goes. I don't want to ruin it for people, but I'm like, this is gonna happen here, this is gonna happen here, this is gonna happen here. And then, yeah, Nick watched the whole thing, and he was like, yeah, he liked it much better than I did, though. But
maybe if you had finished it, you would have liked it.
Oh, my God.
You can't have an opinion about a movie you haven't finished.
I absolutely can't.
Okay, so you brought up two really interesting things that I would like.
I love when we get feisty.
Right? I love it. One is, how far do you have to have watched a film to be able to form an idea about it? Do you have to watch 100% of it, or can you get into a certain point? I do think it's interesting, Katie, too, since your job is storytelling. You know what I mean? Like, you are so deep into that, and you know where those come. Bob always thinks it's so funny when I, like, flex my creaky out of date muscles and I go, oh, this is gonna happen. Like when we watched Christmas Chronicles years ago, this is still my thing where I was always like, this is gonna happen next. And he was like, oh, and everything I said did. And so that's one interesting idea. How much of a film do you have to watch to be able to have an opinion on it? And you mentioned like 80% of
All of Us Strangers. Wait, which
All of Us Strangers worked for you. And so therefore it's like I'm interested in that like gradation, like figuring out, like I'm interested in that as a scale for evaluating films or like thinking about it works enough or like, yes, I need to get here. Cause like we always look up like Rotten Tomatoes. So like this one, like Serial Mom got like 65% from reviewers and 72% from, you know, audiences. But I'm curious to know like your own personal systems, not just us, but like also our listeners. What is your own personal system for figuring out if a film is something that, or a movie, because they are different, is something that you would recommend to others? Or even the, like, is it worth it to go to the theaters now, right? With the prevalence of streaming, what is movie theater worthy? And what is, I'm going to stay at home and the sound isn't going to be as good?
Right. Fascinating question. Well, I think not every movie is for everybody, right? So when you're recommending something, you're like, okay, I think you're going to clue in to this one specifically because you like X, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's a certain, like, the reason I said 80-20 for that movie is, like, I'm willing to let go of my feelings about the last 10 minutes because the core 70 minutes affected me in this way. And I think All of Us Strangers is a very different type of movie to talk about because it's not something, it's not a movie. you know, it's not something to just, like, turn your brain off and enjoy. Like, you really have to sit and think. And, like, for me, it was, like, thinking about, like, familial relations. And, like, that was, like, really hard to, like, watch on screen. But we're in this, like, we're in this binary time of, like, it's either good or it's bad, and there's no in-between anymore. Yeah. And I'm really tired of those conversations. Like, it's, like, there are things that are, in every movie, however bad it is or however good it is, there's, like, elements that are either good or bad, right? Like, everyone's praising Oppenheimer, and I'm like, well, I thought it was a little too wordy in these certain sequences. Like, you can criticize whatever you want with anything and praise in something that's terrible. But Rotten Tomatoes also, like, those are predominantly... Serial Mom needs to be watched, be evaluated by people who get it, and not by people who don't. And I think that's where you see a lot of the reviewers on Rotten Tomatoes 2 are, like, straight men. And I don't think straight men get Serial Mom.
Shocking.
Yeah, that's legit.
Hence, like, the lower reviews. But if you talk to any gay man or gay person, they'll be like, yeah, it's one of the best movies ever made.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting, too. It's just like with books, where... when you see it and what's going on in your life and how you see yourself or society or what reflects back, like what you bring as a viewer or a reader to it, like that changes. I have not yet watched the Apple TV series Lessons in Chemistry, but I'm about to reread that book. And I've just been seeing this little clip where Brie Larson's character is there, like, talking about the Grapes of Wrath, I think, and like her meatloaf. And she's like, no, every time my meatloaf is slightly different. And her love interest is like, yeah, it's the same with books. And she's like, why? It stays the same. And he says, but you change.
Mm.
And that just like, oh.
Oh, my God, you're right. Like, I loved Care Bears movie 2, A New Generation, when I was little. Mm. And I rewatched it, and I was like, this movie's shit. You know? But, yeah. I mean, well, and it, as you get older, you, with your life experience, right? Like, you're bringing a different self to it. Which is why, like, Serial Mom was like, I don't know why I'm more connected to it now. I get it,
you
Beverly.
You would do the same.
Yeah.
I mean, me personally. But not really. In the little notebook of movie ratings in my brain, I rate everything 1 to 5 Zeldas.
Yes.
You know, so there's no gray area. No, there's so many times where I'm like, I only have so much time to watch something where I'm like, I don't feel like I will... finish something. On the flip side, with a book, though, I will rage read the end of a book if I really am like halfway through it or three quarters of the way through it. I'm like, I hate this book, but I need to know.
Really?
I need to finish.
That's so much more time investment. That's so much time.
No, fuck it. As the librarian, I'm saying, fuck those books. And like, you have a limited number of books you can read in your life. And if it's shit, just be like, fuck it, I'm out.
Wow, Katie, else. I'm surprised by that.
I've already invested.
Yeah, well, you're a speed reader, right? You read really quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, when I can. At this point, I read so much during the day of comic books that I can't, like, it's not relaxing for me now, at this point, at least right now, to sit down and read because I do it all day. So hopefully that'll switch soon, but it's just too much content going in the eyeballs that I have to comprehend.
Yeah. I am really curious to hear from our listeners what they think. Let's end on this. Let us know, what are your, like, individual rating systems for, like, films, but also for books? Like, how do you decide when you're going to abandon? When you're going to stay? How do you recommend? Mine now is the amount of attention I will devote to it away from my addiction of social media and my phone. And when I set it down and I'm really into it, it's like, holy shit, this is really good. Graham, are you doing the next one? Or Katie, are you introducing us to the next one? Who's coming up after this?
Can be either. Graham, you already talked about Treasure Island.
Let's do it.
You want to do it?
I'll see Muppet Treasure Island.
Yeah.
Muppet Treasure Island.
Which I know is available on Disney Plus. Homework, come with your answer of what Muppet you are.
Oh, that's me.
Ooh.
Okay. I might amend the question if it's too easy.
Okay.
No, add it. Do that one, because I also have been thinking about getting a Muppet Christmas Carol tattoo.
Ooh. But actually... Graham's
face. I'm sorry, Graham, not to copy you with your Muppet tattoo, but
I'm the friend with the Muppet tattoo.
I think that is literally my favorite movie ever. So, Let's talk Muppets.
We're going to talk Muppets, and y'all, we're not really doing themes anymore. We're just going to do whatever we want moving forward.
Yeah.
And if you want to be a guest, or you want to return as a guest, we've got a group of people that can come back. Message us on Let Me Enter You Pod on Instagram, because we don't do X nor Twitter anymore, because bad. No.
Because fuck that guy. And also, I never really started it.
Kitty tweeted once.
I did.
Katie, you did great.
I did a little
bit. You did great when you took over.
But yeah, hopefully this will start coming out a little bit more steady clip as we get our feet. I have to, you know, remember how to actually edit an episode. But yeah, hopefully.
It's fun.
We're going to release this one. We're going to release
this one.
This one's
going to come out.
I do want to say that at Graham's wedding, I could not have felt like more of a celebrity, because so many of your friends coming up to Ashley and I and being like, oh God, you guys are on the podcast. I listen so much. So thank you all of Graham's friends for listening to us and not minding that we are total dorks.
Someone recognized your voice and they were like, oh, that's Katie.
Yeah.
Oh, also, so y'all listeners, these two upstaged the grooms with their fabulous dresses.
Impossible. Impossible.
Everyone was talking about them.
We reflected light back onto you for how wonderful you are.
That's true.
I feel like we took the clothing challenge seriously, though. So
everyone looks so good.
They did.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Everyone looked great.
They did.
I mean, the staff at the A's told us that we were the hottest group of guests, wedding guests they've had in a very long time.
True.
Let's end on that. Right, we're gorgeous.
Yes.
We're gorgeous. And you're gorgeous. All right. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you will come back for next time with Muppet Treasure Island. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, 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 bye.
Let Me Introduce You is a podcast hosted by Graham Veth, Katie Kubert, and Ashley Krohn. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0 license. Make sure to follow the Let Me Introduce You podcast on Instagram at Let Me Intro You Pod and on Twitter at Let Me Intro You.